must tell you, this morning, the State Board of Education had an emergency meeting. Y'all ain't gonna, Drew, you're not gonna believe this. The superintendent went in the meeting and says, I'm gonna cut 3 hours off the 12-hour I-STEP test, try to knock it down less than 9 hours. The consultant hired by Governor Pence says, we can cut this thing down by 3 hours. The test maker, CTB McGraw-Hill, yeah, we can do this. So they're going to shorten the test, which makes our first guest, I won't say happy, he's still apprehensive because they've got the test booklets locked up in safes and under, you know, deep in burrows and vaults and stuff all throughout the Indianapolis Public Schools. He is the superintendent of the Indianapolis Public Schools. That's our first guest. Oh, coming up in our second hour, about 2:15, Jocelyn Tandy Adonde, who yesterday, she's a Republican candidate for mayor, yesterday she challenged the authenticity of one of her opponents, Chuck Brewer, saying that where does he live and did he properly fill out his voter registration and other legal forms at the address where he really lives? She's raising questions. Does he live in Perry Township where he claims he lives, or does he really live in a downtown condo in Center Township? Jocelyn Tandy will be here with us live around 2:15, but we begin with the superintendent of IPS. And IPS has a number of meetings. They've got one this coming Monday at the Central Library, and then on February the 18th, also at the Central Library, another one on February 19th and then 25th. IPS is putting together a strategic plan. Now, I know some of you have strategic plans somewhere buried in a box that IPS has done over the years, but the superintendent says this is going to be different. They're looking at family and community, efficient operations of our schools, and teaching and learning. And the superintendent of IPS, Dr. Louis Farabee, joins me live. How you doing?
Doing well, sir. Thank you for having me today.
So what's the purpose of strategic plan? Is this something in a bound document that will join all the other bound documents that are sitting either in my office or in a storage vault somewhere that I've gathered over 40 years and nobody does anything about it?
Great question, Amos. Absolutely not. We anticipate that this will be a living and breathing document. This is a tremendous opportunity to take advantage of the ownership and responsibility that the community has raised up, that we want to own improvement in IPS. And so as we think about transforming the district and improving student outcomes, our service to students and families, it begins with an engaged community, and this is an opportunity for the community to be a part of the drafting process. Mm-hmm. We had an opportunity to hear from our stakeholders last year. We have extensive listening, and so we're taking that information and our findings and drafting a process and a plan. And so from that, we have several community meetings. We're inviting the community to review the data that we collected last year and then be a part of the drafting process by signing up to be on committees. In the three areas you've just outlined, efficient operation, teaching and learning, and family and community engagement.
Is this a plan designed to take the district next 5 years, 10, 15, or so, just the next two or three?
Yeah, so we're thinking the next 3 years, mm-hmm. Amos, is the most appropriate timeline to operate from in terms of creating the future for IPS and also defining success for IPS as well.
How do you and your administration define success? Is it getting farther away from a D and closer to a C school district? Is it reducing the number of poor performing schools in IPS? Is it increasing the graduation rate? Is it reducing suspensions? Is it all of the above?
Well, the beauty of this plan is that the community will define success for IPS. Mm-hmm. And so it's not what Louis Farabee wants for the district is what we want for our students and our families. For me, it begins with educational attainment and ensuring that our students are prepared for career, college, and life. And that doesn't necessarily equate to letter grades or other accountability measures. And so I'm excited about redefining the way we measure success in our district and really getting the community input on what's important to them.
How, as part of this strategic plan, is anticipating growth in the district or the district being flatlined? When last school year, not this school year, last school year, the number of students in IPS increased a bit, crossed back over 30,000. This year, the state hasn't released the final official numbers. I think they're a little busy trying to cut down the length of the ISTEP test. But you fell below the 30,000 mark for this year. You had a sharp drop of more than 1,000 African-American students. Is part of preparing this strategic plan, looking at where the district is in terms of demographics, in terms of overall growth or lack of growth? Is it coming from black, white, Latino?
Our obligation is to all of our students and our families. And so, what you see in our enrollment sometimes reflect the changes in the different demographics of our community. Mm-hmm. But we want to serve every family well and every demographic of our community. And we believe that by focusing on a 3 to 4 year plan in terms of those increments, it gives us an opportunity to get closer to the overall vision while allowing some flexibility to enhance the educational environment and opportunity for our students and our families. But we want everybody to succeed in the new IPS.
There's when you talk about family and community, and that was the first group of two meetings in terms of the strategic plan. What did you hear?
Oh, well, there are barriers. One of the things that we heard is that, while community members want to be involved and be helpful, there were barriers to people volunteering and have an opportunity to go into our schools. Parental involvement continues to be a challenge. There's also negative perceptions that we hear about the school district, and there's a lack of information and knowledge for our families. And we address that in some of the work that we've done this school year, but we know we still have a ways to go.
Are there still a lot of opportunities for partnerships between the community and IPS schools? I think people are familiar with partnerships that exist with the business community. The Indiana Pacers, Kroger, or a couple of businesses that immediately come to mind. There was a story yesterday on Channel 6 about a small church that's helping out School 88 at Anna Brockhausen Elementary School. Is a small church. It's only got 100 members. I think it's called the First Bible Church. Jack Reinhardt did the story yesterday where they're there, even though it's a very small church, they're there helping those students, because half the students evidently at School 88 have no permanent address. They literally are homeless. They live in shelters or living with relatives. It's a problem in IPS that your predecessor two superintendents ago, Pat Pritchett, first brought to the attention of the community, the problem of homeless students, and I gather it's not declining, it's growing.
Right. So one of the areas that we've discussed in our recent meetings with family and community engagement is district mobility. And that was one of the areas identified as one of our challenges. We currently transport over 1,300 students that are homeless, and those are documented. And you can imagine that number is probably even higher with our undocumented students. And so
1,300.
Right. We have 1,300 students that we transport, and about 400 of those students are actually out of the district. Mm-hmm. But again, that's documented. And so we know that there are potentially more numbers. And then, we do this through the McKinney-Vento Act, which is a federal requirement for us to do so. But we also have tremendous mobility in several of our schools, where we're just concerned about the inconsistency that our students have. And so we will develop strategy around addressing mobility in the district and ensuring that our students that are homeless or, again, don't have stability at home or in the neighborhood, we do a better job serving them and their families.
We're with the superintendent of IPS, 239-1310, 239-1310. You can send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, 37890, keyword Amos, money. Now, your first year in the budget, you found that we had extra money, and we weren't $30 million in the hole. We were $4 to $5 million in the black. And I understand for the budget for 2014, you ended it in the black, not in the red.
Correct. So over the last 3 years, we've been able to reduce our expenditures by over 20%. Mm-hmm. We've, found several.
Is that like less books, less paper clips,
absolutely
less crayons?
Not. So that actually we're reducing those expenses to have more instructional supplies and materials to address teacher compensation and compensation for our employees and protecting the classroom as much as possible. But part of that work had to be done, quite honestly, Amos, because we were receiving reduced funding from the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the last 5 years, we've got about $70 million less in state funding. And that's over about $1,400 per pupil, that we got 5 years ago that we don't get now. And there's some talk that that would even be further reduced in the coming years. And so we're level setting, and we're also being more realistic with our planning and how we use our resources.
In the strategic plan that you're talking and asking the community, and they can go to the website at we gotta have www.myips.org, because I tried to put it up without www and your website gets persnickety. www.myips.org, and it's right there on the homepage, strategic plan, and you can RSVP for the upcoming meetings, which are this coming Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then the following, February the 25th. The ones, Monday and Wednesday are at the Central Library downtown. Then on February 19th, they're going out to the Far East Side. Oh Lord. To CAFE, Community Alliance of the Far East Side at 38th and Post. And then on February the 25th, they'll be at the College Avenue, branch of the library at 42nd and College. And all of the meetings are from 6:30 to 7:30 in the evening.
And Amos, by the way, if individuals cannot get to our website, they can go to our website through our mobile app if they have a smartphone.
Okay.
But they can also call 317-226-4000. 317-226-4000 and get more information on the meetings or sign up to be on one of our committees on the three areas and be a part of drafting our strategic plan.
Going back on the strategic plan, as you're hearing from people, are you starting to hear, why can't my kid go to school closer to their house? Can we start taking a hard look at not having to bus people from one side of town to the other in a boundary school, not a magnet? I know a magnet comes from everywhere in the district, but a boundary school theoretically is somebody close to home, and there's been, you know, kids bussed all over heck and back, as part of the DSEG. DSEG finally ends in the 2015-2016 school year. First of all, is there feedback that you're getting from the IPS community to try to keep kids in the boundary schools closer to home?
Yeah, Amos, what we've heard is we want to protect our neighborhood schools. So a lot of community members have expressed concern over their neighborhood schools because students currently aren't attending their neighborhood schools, which is a barrier for extracurricular after-school activities. If you're in your neighborhood, you're more apt to participate. And in many cases, the school is the hub of the community. And so there are some that are concerned that, you know, maybe perhaps the schools aren't the center of the community in the way they should be. We should be using our facilities before school, after school. In some schools, we utilize our facilities up to about 11 o'clock p.m.
Right.
I would like for that to occur in all of our schools and take advantage of the wonderful facilities we have and ensure that students, like you said, don't have to take a long bus ride. They can feel comfortable to attend the school in their neighborhood.
Are there areas within the IPS district that are growing where the capacity of your schools are getting close to 70, 80, 100%? And are there areas of town where the capacity just is not there, where you've got schools at 30, 40%? And yeah, is that one of the other issues?
Yeah, so there are sectors of our boundaries where we've seen tremendous growth, and we have schools that are at above capacity. But part of our plans through the efficient operations area is to do a long range study of student growth and ensure that we're utilizing our facilities accordingly. There's also been concern that, you know, for example, schools like Arlington High School that we look forward to transition to IPS, that many of those students were given options to go to other schools across the district. And so we want to bring those students back
to Arlington,
to their neighborhood school. And we believe, again, the more opportunities students have to go to school in their neighborhood. And don't get me wrong, every neighborhood school needs to be a quality option for families. And that's an area that we need to improve, because not all of our neighborhood schools are at the level I want them to be.
When you get Arlington back, you will end up with far more capacity in your high schools than you've got kids that are currently in high school and kids in the pipeline. Does that mean, and you have kicked around options regarding if when you get, I'm thinking positive, when you get Arlington back.
I appreciate you thinking positive.
When you get Arlington back, what does that do to John Marshall? And that neighborhood on the Far East Side has suffered probably more than their share of negative economic development. So, and as I understand it, you can't get rid of the building because it's collateral on a $750 million bond issue that IPS did, almost now 20 years ago in terms of refurbishing facilities, putting air conditioning and everything and what have you.
Yeah. So there has been some work at John Marshall, but, it did not receive heavy, support from, the bond, but we understand that John Marshall is vital to the Far East Side community, and it's one of the facilities that provides tremendous opportunity. I'm excited the Boys and Girls Club, they've broken ground in that area as well. Mm-hmm. You got cafe out there, and so we understand the importance of that facility to the community. We were just exploring options to ensure that we were maximizing Arlington and John Marshall. The thinking is at this point that we first need to get students in Arlington to mm-hmm. their neighborhood school. Mm-hmm. We've had conversations and meetings with the students that are in the elementary schools that feed into Arlington to get them engaged and excited about going to their high school. So we believe that's our first step for this upcoming school year. And there's no plans at this point to close either school, and we want to maximize enrollment in those schools as well.
Well, the other issue that's probably going to come that has been controversial ever since Dr. Eugene White decided one day, gee, let's put middle schools in the same building as high school. I don't know what magazine he was reading, what academic paper said that was the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I think anybody who takes a reasonable look at how that combination has worked here in Indianapolis would agree it ain't worked at all. So moving forward, what is IPS going to do? Are you all finally going to split the middle schools away from the high schools? So a high school will be just a high school and not middle school? Where are you guys on that? Because that has caused more doggone problems for your predecessors and for you than any one particular issue.
So that will be addressed in our vision for IPS. I mean, there has to be strategy around that. Personally, I'm not a fan of the 7-12 model. I do have concerns with having middle grade students and high school students in the same building. You also, if you look at our data where the middle grade students are separate from high school, they're higher performing than those middle grade students that are within our 7-12 model. Mm-hmm. We recently did some work to start, you know, traditional middle grade schools and Harshman and our magnet program there. We're exploring other middle grades option. Right. We also need to do some work with 9-12 and establishing a high school. And we've done that with the work that we're doing at Shortridge. That'll be 9-12. And, of course, Arsenal Tech is 9-12. So that is something that's on our radar that we will address.
We're talking with Dr. Louis Farabee, the superintendent of IPS, 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll take a break when we come back. Because superintendent is always looking for good news. I'm going to tell him about something that's going on right now at Arsenal Tech, where there's an all-male assembly going on. The chief of police is there. Gary Brackett is there. Mike Epps, graduate of Tech High School, having a concert this weekend somewhere. He's there. Talking to young men, because it's not just all African-American men, at Tech High School about the importance of getting an education, self-image, social, and all kind of good stuff at Tech. Anyway, it's Superintendent Farabee after these.
Hello, this is Sheriff John Layton, and when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
239-1310 with Superintendent of IPS, Dr. Louis Farabee. What is this transformational thingamajig you and the board have talked about? And you've also gone to the legislature talking about transformational zones, and it sounds like a science fiction movie. What is that?
So the transformation zone model is a intervention strategy that we are proposing be utilized in lieu of previous State Board of Education strategy, i.e. takeover or lead partner. Mm-hmm. And so this is an opportunity for the district to take the lead on intervention. And by doing so, the district would not only address the high schools that have been struggling, but we would include similar strategy and intensive support to the elementary schools feeding that high school. So, mm-hmm. for example, what we propose at George Washington High School, IPS take the lead with intervention there. And we would also bring into the fold two elementary schools that feed into George Washington. So we're preparing those students to be better successful in high school, because those high schools that are underperforming, a part of that is, you know, they're not receiving the students that are on grade level and prepared mm-hmm. to be successful. So we believe a K-12 continuum of supporting the same students who live in the same neighborhoods, who attend the same schools, is a better approach, along with IPS taking the lead. At the end of the day, truth of the matter is, the takeover strategy has not been very successful. The results have been mixed at best. And the lead partner approach, where we've given millions of dollars to people from Florida and Texas to come in a couple of days a week and fix this, hasn't worked either. So we believe that this is a smarter strategy and also better utilization of our taxpayer dollars.
When I'm looking at the website at www.myips.org, like all websites, y'all got these little sliding windows that they kind of slide over and do all kind of stuff. And one of them caught my attention, and it's talked about bullying. And it says, you know, y'all do not, that IPS is a bully-free zone. And if you see it, report it. And if I had to categorize calls that I get about not just IPS, but about all school systems, public and charter, it's parents who have had a problem with their child being bullied. And they report it to the school. Allegedly, the school does nothing about it. Then the next thing you know, the bully goes after the kid, and the kid's tired of it, and the kid, you know, whops back on the bully, and then the school is suspending the kid that got bullied because nobody really took it seriously. From your point of view as a person at the top of the pyramid, if a parent or grandparent, you know, gets a report from their child or grandchild that somebody is bullying them in one of your schools, what do you want them to do?
So I first want to make sure that they're reported to the adults in the school building. Okay. And that can be the teachers, the administrators, and ensure that there's follow-up. If there isn't follow-up from the adults in the building, we have our academic improvement officers that serve and supervise our schools, and they would be the next point of contact. But it's something that we take very seriously in terms of bullying. We know it happens. And we want to know about it when it happens so we can address it.
Not just an oral report. Should that also be followed up by something written, either in a ordinary handwritten or typewritten note or an email to the teacher, the principal, and the academic improvement person if there's no response from the principal?
Right. So the more information that we have about the alleged bullying incident, the better. Mm-hmm. So we can address it. But of course, the same number that I gave earlier, when there's a concern, want individuals to call in to our service center. That number is 317-226-4000 and share the school, the situation, and someone will follow up.
Is it also important when it happens right away, don't let it wait 2, 3, 4 weeks, 6 months?
Yes. And so when it happens, it's important to report it, but also if you have, you know, information about the incident, what occurred, if you could just give us specifics, it puts us in a better position to address the alleged bullying. This is a very serious issue for us, and we want to make sure that we address it. It's not an issue of, you know, just happened between you know, male and female. It happens between same genders, cross genders, and different age groups. So I just want to make sure that we address it and we get to it as soon as possible.
On a couple of schools where that have had some publicized incidents, one, the whole Shortridge situation, has there been a strong response of students signing up to be in the law and public policy program that's now moving to Tech?
We've had some interest, but quite honestly, Amos, and we'll present this information to our Board of Commissioners on this coming Tuesday, February 17th, at our academic briefing. The majority of the students want to remain at Shortridge, mm-hmm. And we, you know, definitely will have that opportunity available to them. As we said to all the students at Shortridge, you want to remain, you have that opportunity. Some students decided to take advantage of other magnet programs, such as our fine arts program at Broad Ripple or the medical magnet at Crispus Attucks. But the vast majority elected to remain at Shortridge.
Are there another school where there's been problems? George Washington on the west side. The last fall there was an incident involving Latino students and African American students that allegedly had some injury to a student that was reported on television news. There's been also reports of teacher vacancies, maybe a higher percentage of substitute teachers, a perception that maybe all is not well in terms of conditions of the school. How would you describe what the situation is in Washington?
So it's a work in progress. We did start the school year with a number of vacancies, and we've gotten that number down. All of the classroom vacancies are filled. Mm-hmm. We had a new principal who was very aggressive with hiring, ensuring that we had the best teachers possible for our students. We then launched a plan to ensure that we address some of the climate issues that were taking place in the school. We'll continue to do that. The school is going through training on a positive behavior model called Capturing Kids' Hearts, which mm-hmm. deals with positive behavior and positive relations with staff and students. But we're also excited that we have the support of our community. Many organizations in the community stepped up to help us transform the learning environment. George Washington recently had a very productive meeting with the staff at IUPUI, the Urban League, NAACP. Very interested in supporting us, George Washington, and we had an opportunity to have a good conversation about how we can support the school moving forward. George Washington, it's one of our high schools that has had a lot of transition and leadership. We've had several lead partner intervention models from the state, and it's just a place that we need to have some consistency. And we have a great new leader there, and I'm looking forward to what the new administration will take to school.
Given that I'd also heard about teacher vacancies in other places, maybe not as pronounced as what I was hearing in Washington, was there a problem in IPS recruiting teachers for the start of the school year?
I wouldn't say it was a problem. I think what we see that is a challenge is, you know, we're one of the school corporations that operates on a balanced calendar. Mm-hmm. And there are several school corporations that start after we start. Mm-hmm. And so what we saw is a large influx of teacher resignations right at the start of the school year, which makes it challenging to hire other teachers.
Yeah, you are trying to either change the rules or policies of the system or state law where you want some notice before a teacher that is scheduled to start with you decides all of a sudden on July 31st, I ain't coming.
Yeah, so there's murky language in the law now currently where if it's a certain date in August that you don't have to give, you know, a 30-day notice. And I believe across the board, you need to have a 30-day notice to ensure that the school corporation can adequately plan to fill the position and have a great teacher for every student. And so that has been a bit of a challenge for us. I also think that, you know, As they should, many of our teachers remain concerned about compensation. Mm-hmm. We were able to raise compensation up this year, but we are looking forward to across the board raise for our teachers for the upcoming bargaining session?
In terms of compensation, yeah, I know you all and then the board raised compensation. That's a raise, y'all. For teachers, what about the bus drivers, the custodians, the teachers' aides, the cafeteria workers?
We actually provided a higher percentage to our other support personnel, such as our custodians, bus drivers, that support our students. And so we'll make sure that we take care of everybody, Amos. And, we did a little. I want to do more. That's why I'm very hopeful that our legislators will protect the funding into our school corporation. And so we can continue the progress made and also take care of our employees.
Suspensions and expulsions. Is it fair to say that the number of suspensions and expulsions in IPS is going down?
Yes, sir. Amos, that was one of the focus areas for this school year. And so while we are drafting a strategic plan, we knew we just couldn't sit on our hands this school year, that there were certain things that need to be done. I was embarrassed by the number of suspensions, arrests, and expulsions that we had last year. Mm-hmm. We've been able to reduce arrests by over 60% this school year. We've been able to reduce suspensions by over 40%, and we've cut the number of expulsions in half. And so I'm excited about those numbers, but we still have more work to do. But we can't be the lead in pumping students in our judicial system. And we also know that with reducing our suspensions, we're putting more time back in the classroom for students, and they're not in school, they can't learn. Mm-hmm.
In terms of that, for people listening saying, wait a minute, so are the students in IPS are becoming more behaved, or what are you doing for the student that perhaps yells at the teacher that maybe 10 years ago that they would have tried to arrest the kid or expel the kid for yelling at the teacher, or you might suspend the kid for yelling at the teacher for 2 or 3 days. What's the alternative if somebody, you know, you walking through the school and go, I don't like you, Faraby? Because, you know, if you're a student doing that, something's going to happen to you.
Yeah. Well, what I would tell you is, what we're saying is, don't yell back, and I don't like you back. I mean, you got to get at the root cause of the behaviors. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of times what we saw in the data is we were suspending the same students over and over again without addressing the behavior. And so you have to get to the root cause of behavior. By no means has our strategy been to turn a blind eye to misbehavior or disruptions. And so we want to address that, and we will address it. But all of our schools have implemented positive behavior models similar to what I mentioned with Captain Keir's Heart at George Washington. If you do the positive behavior work really well, typically you'll see a decline in discipline infractions and also suspensions and expulsions.
The Your Life Matters Task Force pointed a finger at every school district and corporation and charter in this county in terms of not defining why kids are being suspended. There's like a catch-all phrase, and the largest group was the catch-all defiance. You know, that's a town in Ohio. I don't know what all that means. What's IPS doing to, you know, deal with that recommendation from the Your Life Matters Task Force to be more precise of the students that you have to suspend, give some concrete reasons other than defiance?
Right. So,
you know, me walking in the school system and looking at you funny could be defiance now.
Right. So we looked at the categories in which students were being suspended, and there are some very gray areas that are subjective. So we want to make sure that we look at those categories that may be a little bit more subjective. But a lot of that, Amos, is professional learning opportunities for our administrators and teachers.
Right.
You know, a lot of discipline is related to instruction. Mm-hmm. You got really good instruction and students are highly engaged, you're less likely to have discipline issues. And we've also done a lot with racial equity and understanding our students and their culture and their backgrounds, which is also another piece of the professional learning that's taking place that'll continue to take place.
Do the teachers understand that? So in other words, if a teacher has used suspension as a crutch of, I can't control this class, therefore I'm going to recommend to the principal that they suspend this student, and they come up with just, he looked at me funny. Okay, suspend a student for looking at the teacher funny. What are you doing in terms of educating teachers how to implement and how to deal with the problem of a misbehaving student, but that student is not committing a crime.
So I think, you know, that really in my mind starts with our principles, because our principles have to have a filter in terms of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in terms of how to administrate a disciplinary action. But also our principals are responsible for developing teachers, helping provide strategies when there are challenges in the classroom. But again, I still believe it goes back to instructional planning, delivery, and ensuring that students are highly engaged. When you walk into a highly engaged classroom, you do not see disruption. Mm-hmm. But to create that learning environment, there has to be a lot of planning and preparation that goes into that. And also relationships. You know, and I know when there's a relationship, when I believe that you have an interest in me, and it's genuine, I'll do anything for you. And that's how our students are. And so the great teachers, you know, I tweeted last night, the great teachers inspire. Mm-hmm. They see the best in us. They challenge us.
That's those life changing teachers. You know?
Exactly. And, you don't see those disruptions in their classroom. You see tremendous respect. And so that's something that we're working with our teachers as well.
So now in any school system, it's not just Indianapolis, people get attached to the principal of a school. They bond with him or her. They get attached to him, and it's not just a public school thing. It's that way in charters. It's that way in private schools. So when whoever runs the school says the principal of the school needs to be moved, there's a big brouhaha. And I understand that at this past week school board meeting, there was a delegation from one of your schools concerned that something might happen to the principal of that school. There has been no official recommendation. I hear that's coming later in the month. When you get to that recommendation and make a recommendation to the board that some of your principals will either A, be reassigned, or possibly, you know, like sports, you know, the Colts said three players, y'all ain't gonna be with the Colts no more. And it might be 3 or 4 year players, not gonna be with IPS no more. What should the community know about that? Because I think if a community gets attached to the principal of their school, whether they attended that school as alumni or whether they got kids or grandkids in that school, they're attached to that principal. And when they hear that principal is leaving, They take it personally. How do you want the community to view these recommendations you will be making?
So like any organization, IPS continues to evaluate and assess our talent. And we have an obligation to ensure that we have the strongest leaders leading our schools. Those are the most important decisions superintendent and board can make. And so we look at that every year, and we look at progress. We have multiple indicators that we measure school progress. And if we feel like a school isn't making appropriate progress and we need to go in a different direction, we do that. But it's done in fairness and it's done with equity. And so, you know, I think going beyond that with any other specifics would be inappropriate. But, you know, that's
part of the problem in that. There's the community wants to hear more, but you can't say more, not because you don't want to say more, but because there are laws and rules and protections for the school system and for the employee involved.
Absolutely. And so, you know, that would be inappropriate for us to get on specifics on individuals. But in general terms, again, we have the obligation to ensure that we have our best and brightest school leaders in our schools. And the principal, as you know, Amos, is so important to student progress. And if a school isn't making progress, we have to make tough decisions about school leaders.
Will these recommendations be that these individuals leave the system? Will the recommendations be that they will go to some other position within the system, you know, or a combination of those recommendations?
So our recommendation for our Board of Commissioners come in three ways. We recommend hires, we recommend terminations, and contract non-renewals. And mm-hmm. so Those are the three categories in which we make recommendations.
And the recommendations are made in February, which allows those individuals time to make other plans.
Right. There are laws that guide when we make our recommendations.
Will data be, and I know you can't categorize the individuals, but when you talk about growth and non-growth, will at least the data points be released, where at least people can see the data?
Yeah, so we don't release specific data points.
Not the evaluation of the employee, but the data points of the school. So in other words, let's say for the sake of the argument, if the school superintendent is regressing, there's obviously data points. There's test scores, there's graduation rates, there's suspension and expulsion rates, there are a number of data points that are already published about that school. Will those be the data that are shared as just, okay, this school, this is where the data points are?
Yeah, so much of what you describe, they're already made public. And mm-hmm. so that information is available to the public through Department of Education or IPS reporting.
Okay. Is that the toughest decision a superintendent makes in terms of changing a school leader?
Yeah. A school leader is, you know, a tremendous a task for a superintendent and board to ensure that you've got the right people leading your schools. You know, the heartbeat, again, of our schools, your leader and your teachers. And right. your teachers oftentimes respond to the school leader. So it's, you know, the 60-some-odd leaders that we have in our school buildings is a very important decision in terms of who's serving our schools for us. And it's something that we don't take lightly. But it's also something that we do with fairness and equity. And as I said earlier, and we're not going to be in the business of embarrassing people as well. So we do it in such a way that individuals are handled with dignity.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Absolute News. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments. When we come back, we will remind you about your opportunity to participate in the strategic planning process with the Indianapolis Public Schools. Next meeting is Monday down at the Central Library from 6:30 to 7:30. Then they got another meeting on Wednesday, same place. Thursday out of Cafe, Far East Side, at the Community Alliance for the Far East Side. And yes, when we come back, yeah, we'll ask that question too, because everybody waiting for me to ask that question about graduation. It's After News with Amos after these.
Hi, this is Linda L.C. Clements, and when I want to stay informed, I always listen to After News with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
Danae Howard from Fox 59 already tweeted out pictures of Mike Epps and Chief Hyde and others over. It looked like a good crowd of young men over at Tech High School. You know, hearing wisdom, not Mike Epps in his Tech letter jacket. I don't know what he did to get a letter jacket at Tech. He'll probably explain that in the concert.
he is a proud alum. We're thankful to have him. He's been very engaged with Arsenal Technical High School. We got Gary Brackett, Dwayne Allen, like I said, Chief Height. You know, Tech receives tremendous support from the community. Proud of the young men there. You know, still celebrating the boys basketball team and tracking those guys in college. They're doing well. Proud of our young ladies as well. We got our young ladies in sectionals that's going on right now, and our boys will start on end of February, early March. So looking forward to supporting them as well.
So everybody wants to know, you know, forget transformational schools, forget busing, forget A through F. It's about that graduation thing. I had more feedback on that one issue than anything in IPS since the start of busing. What created that? So, because folk was not buying that at all, Doc.
So what created that was an idea, a proposal that was being discussed, and we shared it with principals, and then principals shared it with students, and then we started to hear concern, and we listened to the concern, and we recalculated. Last year, my first year with IPS graduation, we had several parents express concern that they were not able to enjoy the commencement experience for, or I should say graduation experience for all of their seniors because they had seniors that were attending different high schools. Mm-hmm. And there was a barrier of us having all of our graduations at one time. Right. And we also heard for our larger high schools like Arsenal Tech that there were challenges with having everybody come to the graduation. So you know how mm-hmm. When we're proud and everybody shows up for graduations. Right. And so it's a little disheartening that we had to have tickets in some of our schools that limit the number of family members that could attend graduations. And so we were charged with developing some strategy around how we could address those concerns. Some people complain about the acoustics and the setting of the gymnasiums or the auditoriums at the schools. And so we did a survey to our juniors and seniors and just asked them what they would like to see in the graduation. And so we got some feedback that they'd like to have a different facility.
Bigger place, more people. And they want Annie to come.
Right. So exactly. Auntie, Annie, cousins. I mean, something that everybody could attend, be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so we started to look at venues that could host. And we looked at a couple of venues and we threw around the idea of having everybody graduate in a nice large venue where everyone could be accommodated.
And I think the biggest flashpoint wasn't necessarily the venue or the size of the venue or more people come. It was like, you can't do a high school graduation in an hour unless you got like five graduates. Because I think part of the expectation of high school, and given that for many people, that's their ceremony. They're not going to be a 2-year college graduate. They're not going to be a 4-year college graduate for many. And it's not just an IPS thing. I think it's all across the country. High school graduation is it. There is that expectation that you get to walk across a stage for at least 20 seconds, get a diploma, meet the superintendent or the head of the school board or school board member and move on.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, for some kindergarten or pre-K graduations, I mean, it's standing room only. So mm-hmm. I get it. But, you know, having attended a graduation last year at Crispus Attucks Medical Magnet, it wasn't a lengthy mm-hmm. graduation ceremony because we don't have large graduation classes. We felt like we could manage all of those graduations within a reasonable time without compromising the experience. Big families have a lot of cousins and friends, so we want to make sure that we accommodate nephews, nieces, everybody. So you can't go to all services at one time, and then we also couldn't fit everybody in the gymnasium. So we want our ceremonies to be done well. And we believe that it could happen within the time that was allotted.
Now, when you get Arlington back, see, we're thinking positive. Evidently, during the time that Ed Power, Tinley, has been running Arlington, they utilize part of their culture of graduation and their culture of graduation, and they do it in a school afternoon. They invite the whole student body to attend the commencement. And they have enough, the graduating class is small enough where they can do that. So the parents and the relatives and friends get to come, but the undergraduates get to see the end product. It's something that's part of Tinley's culture, where underclassmen can see this is what you're striving for, walking across that stage, getting the diploma. As you look at options of taking back Arlington, and given that that's a model in those early years, would you all look at that and keeping that? Because when I heard about that, even though it was in the daytime, I said, what a great idea to show the juniors and sophomores and maybe freshmen at a high school, this is what you're shooting for. This is what you're striving for.
And so I believe that at the Crispus Attucks Medical Magnet High School graduation, they had underclassmen attending. And so mm-hmm. many of our schools do that already.
Trying to figure out how to do that.
Right. And I think it's a great approach to, you know, just having them think about the end in mind and graduation. The challenge is we can't do that in our current high schools right now. I mean, you can imagine the entire student body or underclassmen at Arsenal Tech in the gymnasium along with the graduates and their families and friends. It just can't happen.
Well, that's when you call the Pacers and say, I need Banker's Life for 2 or 3 days.
Absolutely. And the Pacers have been very, very gracious and supportive. And so that's an option that we would like to explore, is to bring everybody in and have people enjoy the experience. But again, to do that, it would take our students off of the campus for graduation. And we did hear some concerns regard, and it may just come down. We do graduations differently for different schools. I like to have consistency though, but you know, like many other decisions, I don't think we're going to get to a decision that's going to make everybody happy.
Two things quickly on ISTEP. Did you all have computer problems yesterday? I understand there was a lot of computer problems with the stress test of everybody lighting up their computers and trying to access how the ISTEP was going to work online. What was IPS's experience like yesterday?
We've had challenges with the readiness and stress test. I'm very concerned with this year's assessments, and we're doing our part to ensure that our staff and students are prepared, but I am very concerned.
In the window you have from the state, which starts as early as the 25th and I think runs to maybe the 10th or 12th, you as the district have the option of starting on the 25th or pushing it back later. So obviously you're going to be looking for guidance very quickly from the Department of Education, State Department of Education, to know how they're going to do this thing in terms of cut 3 hours out of a test, and be able, and you all being able to communicate that to all your schools and the staff.
Yeah, so we haven't received any information to date that a decision has been made about ISTEP or any reduction in the length of time.
Assume they're cutting 3 hours out. Yeah, so, and they're cutting social studies if the legislature approves, whatever that means.
So we've been preparing based on current legislation. We prefer to have our students over prepared in terms of being under prepared for the assessments. I do wonder how we are going to be able to truly measure growth, given that we have a new assessment and we're supposed to be comparing growth with the previous assessment to help calculate our letter grade. And so
you have publicly said they ought to freeze this year's grade and let's look at the results, learn from them, and everything counts the following year.
I think for us, a approach that we would appreciate is some way that we could press pause where we can study the validity of this year's results before assigning accountability grades or measure. I just worry there's a lot at stake. Mm-hmm. And with a new assessment and new standards, something could get lost. And there's a lot to lose. Of course, this is a part of not only how we measure school success, but it's also a part of teacher evaluation as well. And so just given the level of accountability and how the stakes are, I do worry that in this first year, especially what we've seen in other states, I mean, we've seen tremendous dips in performance. I would not want it to have a negative impact on how IPS schools or teachers are evaluating the measure.
Yeah, because IPS has come out of the cellar into a D, and which is a major accomplishment for the district.
Yes, we're proud of the progress we've made. I mean, we're not at a point where we can run a victory lap, but we want to continue to build on that. And I worry that this puts us at risk of having, kind of unfair measure of the type of progress has been achieved in our school, because you have to keep in mind, we're saying we're going to compare growth from our old assessment to a new assessment, and we get a lot of points off growth because a lot of our students don't come to us on grade level.
Mm-hmm. And so you bring them from that up.
Yeah, so I do worry about that.
Well, the governor will be here Monday at 1:30. The Superintendent Ritz will be here Monday at 2. So I'm going to say, Superintendent Farabee, was that? Can y'all pause this for a minute, because he's afraid there's not going to be any growth, and he wants to have his district, he knows is growing. Right. Superintendent Louis Farabee, head of IPS, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, Amos.